Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.
Hello, everyone. And thank you for being on our program today. We appreciate you and just thank you for all your support. So today, we're introducing a woman who's not only a Renaissance woman, but she's also a survivor. And we know her well here at Vertical, and so we're happy to introduce her to you. Her name is Arlene McGuire, and Arlene grew up in Harlem, New York. Her family came to the U.S. from Jamaica, West Indies, and as a young person, she loved words, including reading and writing and essays, and today, she just has many gifts. I'm excited to interview her today on the program because not only is she a Renaissance woman and a survivor, but she is a great example of being able to still live a life after many things have happened and pursuing your passion. And we're going to have an opportunity to talk about all of Arlene's passions. So today, I'd like you to welcome Arlene McGuire to A Woman on the Rise. Thank you. Hi, Arlene. How are you?
Hello. Good evening. I'm fine. Thank you, Celeste. Fine. Thank you.
Great. I'm really excited to have you on the program today because we've been wanting to do a series of programs for women who are, I'll say, mature women who've not only gone through many lives but are still pursuing a passion and being energized by things they've gone through in your life. So today I want to talk about a few things. I mean, Arlene worked with Vertical Reading Room. She has a beautiful voice as a voiceover professional. She's also been in radio programs as well. She has a beautiful reading voice. We still call her when we have people that want to have someone do reading because she has a great voice and it just really makes the story come alive. And she wrote a book in April 2017, Hanging Out in the Quiet. And so we have some questions for you from inquiring minds, Arlene.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about growing up because you started all this, this creativity with words. And so tell us a little bit about the type of child you were.
I read a lot. I'm the oldest of four girls, but I lived with my grandmother, so I was in seclusion most of my formative years with her. Growing up in Jamaica, it was very strict. I went to church, I went to school, I went home. That was the extent of it. And so I learned how to be by myself. And that was good because as you get older, there are many times you must be by yourself. And I never had a problem with it. So that helped me coming into where I am now to being by myself. We were very poor. Sometimes we had no food, and what little we had, she taught me how to manage that. I didn't have many clothes, and she taught me how to wash and iron and keep them clean and patch them when they needed mending. And being a part of the church, you learned that that was all there was. It was only God. It was nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So that foundation, that foundation stayed with me throughout. And she went home in 90, I forget when she went home, but her influence of strength was there.
Mm-hmm.
In me throughout. And my mother came into the picture after we came to the U.S. And it was a very trying time being a teenager, and suddenly my mom wanted to tell me how to do everything. I was like, no, I'm not having it. And so we had some rough patches, but through it all, she was a handicapped person, and she raised her three daughters and then myself. And she was a go-getter. She was a go-getter, and I emulate her to this day. I do. I try to get in. I try to get into a lot of things. She brought that book about, actually, Hanging Out in the Quiet. I found I spent a lot of time just sitting at her graveside. I'd get a blanket, and I would go talk to her and cry and tell her my problems. But you've brought the love for reading. You've brought the love for words. I wrote very well. I wrote essays very well. I always had good grades on grammar and English and essay writing in school. Math, no, sir. But English, yeah, that was my favorite thing. So it stayed with me. I really started writing on the back end of the years into my late 20s, 30s. I started to write poetry. And I lost some of those poems, but then I started saving them because now we had computers, and I started saving them. So many of them in the first book, Hanging Out in the Quiet, with back things, and then my mom coming forward, and then the cancer coming forward. So that's my beginning from the school, from the church.
So would you say that a lot of that time, and actually now that you're telling me that, it makes me think about the title of your book, Hanging Out in the Quiet, when you were growing up. So being that you were by yourself a lot, that gave you probably a pretty huge imagination, would you say, to help with your writing?
It did. I'm not prone to writing novels or stories, though. I feel as though I become enlivened by poetry. Poetry just has more meaning to me because I can say in a few sentences what I'm truly feeling as opposed to building a story. Sometimes my poetry sounds like a story. I'm thinking of Awaiting the New Year. It's a story. We're watching this woman prepare for before midnight on the end of the year. And it, when I think about it, it sounds like a story, but it's very short. It's minuscule even. Poetry is what moves me most. Yeah.
What kind of things do you write about in your poetry? What inspires you when you're writing poetry? Is it something that you might see, or is it poetry about life in general? What inspires
in
you
general,
to write poetry?
Everyday life. I can go and write a poetry about making coffee.
Okay.
I can think of a word. I have a poem called A Handkerchief, a poem called A Favor. He-Man. He-Man was something off a show I was watching, and it was a superhero. And my thought was, well, just a guy can be a superhero. I don't reach for the stars for it because I feel it comes to me by one word. There'll be one word that will liven my spirit. I'm watching a movie and someone says something that may trigger a memory from my own life, and I can start scribbling. So I feel as though that leaves me unrestricted to a specific niche or a specific type of poem, or it's free verse or prose to me because I just write it until I stop. So it's easier that way, and I get to express more of what I'm feeling. So my big thing when I tell people, it's just everyday life that I write about.
Okay. Now, as a voice professional, let's talk about how you got into being a voice professional.
I started back in 1988, and these vocational schools were burgeoning, and everybody tried to get into a school to do something. I went to Secretarial Science School at Borough of Manhattan Community College. But then you started hearing, oh, you have this voice, you sound like a radio person. And there was a school that was teaching how to be on air, or, you know, in whatever capacity, voiceover or as a DJ or whatever. I paid into the school, and they closed 2 weeks later. So yeah, from that I lost that, but I kept going in some small way. My thing about reading, I was always the person in church they called on to read or to sing solos or to recite poetry. So I had no problem with being in front of a microphone, and it was
easy
to me. Yeah, it was easy. I watch people who were shy, and I feel for them when they have to stand up and speak, because I never think anything about it. And so the voiceover, I tapped into many sources of people in the industry, and not many, a few. I knew a few. Nothing. Everyone was scrambling, as they still are today, trying to make their own way. And so I went back to, by then I probably had 2 children, and I was trying to help take care of them, and you know, you trying to build a life, and it just went to the back burner. But I kept a hand in. There was always something to learn, and so I read whatever I could, and I practiced by reading and coming forward. I looked for opportunities, and they just never seemed to pan out for me. But then there was Vertical Reading Room, and I had a good time. I had an awesome time doing that, and reading Barry's books was just wonderful. I tried with ACX, and nobody ever chose me to read their books. But Barbara Berry was kind enough, and you got me on air in Vertical Reading Room, and it was awesome. It was a really good experience.
Well,
put me on the map.
I have to share with everyone, because the way Vertical met Arlene was we were hanging out on social media one night, and I saw a thing Arlene was reciting. Phenomenal Woman is what it was. She was reciting, and I'm not sure if it was Poetry Month or not. But anyway, I remember hanging out, and I heard her voice, and I'm like, oh, my God, this voice is incredible. And so I was like, we got to get her to do the reading. And so we got in touch with Arlene, and it was, I'm telling you, she made those books really pop when she read them. And it was just such an incredible thing that I still, when people write something, I'm like, hey, Arlene, you want to do some voice work? So I'm excited because I'm excited. Your newest work that you did was a 30-minute story called Honey for the Sauce. And I'll be sharing that with social media, because it's an incredible story, but Arlene's voice makes it even more incredible. So hopefully those who are listening will check out Honey for the Sauce. So how did you feel doing those books on the radio? What did it make you feel like? Did you get any, you know, did anybody come to you after that and want you to do more voice work? But I've recently heard that you're on the radio.
It didn't become anything because I'm not good at publicizing or promoting myself. I'm just not. And so when that went to rest, it went to rest. And yes, I was picked up by the Urban Sound Suite. The DJ there, Mr. Matt Houston, asked me to do some voice imaging for him, and I'm still employed. I still do that work. And the station, one of the stations he was working with, Sensational Sounds, I have done some of their promotional work or imaging work for the other groups or the other shows that are broadcast on Sensational Sound. So those two things are still in place. And in the meantime, I've created a podcast for myself, Quiet Moments. I'm reading all the poems from Hanging Out in the Quiet, that book. I have a book in the works to be printed. It will be here shortly, and that's called Beyond the Moon, an extension of the poetry that I write. However, this one will not have the matching stories. They're just poems.
Okay.
I just felt like releasing all those poems. Hanging Out in the Quiet has an explanatory story about the poem, why I wrote it, what created the idea in me. So voiceover stays, and as you said, you presented something. And so I still dibble and dabble, and I'm recording my own book, so that requires a lot of time. So I'm fine with that. I feel I'm still doing voiceover. It's just I don't make the money the other voice artists out there make. But I promise you, when somebody, as you speak of this now, our experience with Vertical, and the comments that used to come in on from that those readings, that's my payment. I feel as though this is just to know somebody's smiling because they're listening to me reading right now. That's my joy. And with the same feeling you get with whatever you're doing, that you're sharing this gift. I'm not going to be called a bad steward. No, sir.
Well, I have to say to you that you reading reminds me of one time I was messing around with my mom's music, and my mom loved Dinah Washington and all those singers, and I used to just listen to them. She would be playing them, and I listened to them. But one time, I heard her play a album by Arthur Prysock, and the album was called "This Is My Beloved," and it made a huge impression on me and my brother because he pretty much talks. He tells a story on the album.
Yeah.
And he has this beautiful music playing in the background. And I want you to listen to it, because when I heard that and I heard you doing the reading, you remind me of that recording that is such your voice has a melody within itself. And so it makes it, whatever you're reading, it just really makes it pop. Okay, so I don't know how to explain that, but you're going to have to get that album. I'm going to have to send you a song or something, so you got to hear that. But it's a voice that stays with you with the story. So I just want to tell you that, because I really appreciate you doing the work that you did. And, we can always bring some of that great poetry that you did, because you, Arlene, also did some programs, Christmas program that she did on Vertical that we really appreciated, and reading a lot of the poetry as well. Read something from Hanging Out in the Quiet as we go through the show. I'll let you pick something. Now I want to talk about another one of your great creative expressions. You had been doing some wonderful painting, mixed media, when I first knew you. But before that, you were doing the painting, but then you went through a battle with cancer. Can you tell us about that? What about that battle?
I can say it was a surprise. It really was, because I've always been healthy, but I developed a problem where my a little knot, a little lump grew on the side on my forehead, and it became very painful. It would swell and it would just distort my face. Well, I went through my own methods of trying to get rid of it until I couldn't, and the pain was unbearable. So I was treated for silent migraines for a year and a half. And finally, doctor said, let's do a biopsy on the back of your ear. We don't want your vision to be compromised. So they cut the back and checked that. Whatever that is back there, I was fine. My vision was going to be okay. Treatment went on medication. Then he said, let's just biopsy the thing when it swells up again. And the results came back a week later, Hodgkin's lymphoma. But I was very early stage, like stage two. I don't know exactly, but it was early. And so that next, the following week, I was in the care of Georgia cancer specialist, Dr. Zivanti Srinivasya. And it just went from there, nine months of chemo and then radiation. And by December, I was out of the woods with it all, and we now had to wait to see if we'd cancel it from my body. Well, 2 days ago, I've been a year now. 2 days ago, I received a report back from the scans. Nothing at all. Nothing at all. Anywhere, no lymph. Yeah. Now, the fun of this is that it's the very same cancer my mother had. And she was treated by the very same doctor the surgeon referred me to. Who knew? Mm-hmm. He had no idea of that, but I ended
what
up
a blessing,
with the
right?
Same doctor, exactly.
Wow!
And so I felt in good hands. I just felt so secure from day one going in, and she is awesome. And I got through that. The struggles were there. I ended up having to be transfused once because I went out. All of blood volume was just bad, but I got myself to the hospital and they transfused me right away. When I came out of it, you know, it was amazing that I was still there. So all the devastation that those chemicals do to your body are very real, people. They're very real. You can feel these things in your body. You really can. And when you wake up in the middle of the night and there's just nothing you can do but experience it and go through it. So that struggle was difficult. But there's just a mindset you have to create for yourself that you can make it through, you will make it through. Take a deep breath, another deep breath, and keep going on. That's the only solution I found. But yeah, that was rough. That was rough.
So tell me about your paintings, because I know you had started painting before, or either you probably were already painting, you know, before the cancer.
No.
But tell me, well, you were painting after the cancer.
I started painting when I came back from California. In 2014, I came back and I had retired in 2012. Now I was sitting at home. I'm like, I need to do something. And I don't know how I discovered Michael's hobby store. And I went in there and I bought something. But they also had a class where you could go and learn how to do these things. So I signed up for that and went to the class. And the instructor, Grumbacher, she was an awesome lady. We're still friends on Facebook. And the next week when I returned to class, she was not there.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay, now what do I do? So I had instruction. I had instruction one class, and that painting is literally on the wall here, and I look at it and say, what was I painting in that? I remember it very well. I was painting an orange that was cut in half on a white plate, and I created a yellow background. Celeste, it does not look like an orange cut in half on a plate. But it's the most beautiful thing to me. And so I'm thinking, well, that was my original. This art has been mute in me as a passion, as a creative outlet, because it's almost in my genes. My dad was a commercial artist. I remember seeing him on scaffoldings up in the sky painting letters for the names of businesses and whatever he was drawing. There was a beautiful mural on my mother's wall that he painted for her. And so when we were together, I saw him paint. I watched him work. It did not grow. My mom, handicapped, she did the most beautiful painting of two birds, robin redbreasts, on a tree limb. I can look at it right now. But I never felt the urge for art. I just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So 2014, when this came up, it just blew up. It simply blew. I tried everything I saw on YouTube or whatever, art, Pinterest or wherever, and I got ideas and I tried them and just kept going. And I decided then, a couple of years in, I'm like, what am I going to do with all this stuff? People say, we're going to sell it. I'm like, no, I don't know how to price it and all of that. I said, but here's what I'm going to do. I have grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Now I feel like this is going to be what I leave for them. I can leave this for them. They can fight over this. They can come in and do, you know, snatch what they want off the walls. I'm going to have to put them in storage. But this was, and I became so excited about that idea, I kept going. And my poor husband just looks up every day, oh my God, she's at it again.
What kind of paint do you paint with when you're painting? I mean, what kind of paint medium do you use?
Mostly acrylic, and I use the pouring type of acrylic, and then acrylic that you just create art from just with just a brush, not making a liquid form. So I do both of those. And then I worked with the oils, not extensively, but I did put my hand to oils, and I enjoyed when I did them. And the thing that was most interesting to me were the alcohol inks. I had never heard of that. So when I found a person that did it on Pinterest, I said, okay, I'm going to try to do this. So I bought some and loved it. It's very taxing because once you add alcohol to these things, they take off. They take off.
Oh, wow.
You're needing to do a little control thing. It's not like painting with an oil and it's structured. So when the ink goes, you go with it and you add something and then you add a fixative that's going to kind of cement it in place. And so it's fun. And reading all those methods that people use to do things was exciting. So those three areas, so there's a rosin that you can add to things. I have quite a few glass plates that I used alcohol ink on and then set them with a rosin on top so that if you're using
it
as
amazing.
A poster. Yeah.
It's amazing because when I see some of your artwork, it does look like it's moving. Some of your work just looks like it's flowing or like it's just like you're looking at it and it looks like all of a sudden it just a color just explodes, you know. So that's interesting. No wonder why it has that effect. That's great.
Yes. And the pores, what's tedious about the pores is that what you're speaking of right now, I'm standing and holding this canvas, and you're moving it very slowly. You're moving it so slowly you can't even see yourself move to get that paint to create and open those cells that you're trying to create. And then you have to get it to run off of the canvas and go down to the other end. And sometimes it does not do what you want it to, and you create something else. And you put
rolls,
whatever. So the fun of
What happens if it doesn't go your way, though? What do you do then? If it doesn't go your way,
that's when you get creative. I have some balloons and I put water in them, and you seal them off, and then you take the balloon and tap into the paint, and you wipe it off, and you tap someplace else. Or I have a hammer that I smash the paint. Or I have a hair dryer that I blow the paint. Or I take a big straw and lean over the paint and blow it into specific sections of trying to make a flower or getting it to mix with other paint. Yeah. So all of those several ways, if it all goes wrong. Oh, and then I add other things to it. I add a puffy ink that stands up off the canvas. So it's touchable for a child. Yeah, and so many of the things I send to for children, any children in our family, they can actually feel. They can feel the paint itself on the canvas. Those are always it. Then I add salt, I add sugar, I do other things, pieces of metal, whatever you can find.
That's very interesting.
I encourage.
Oh, you know what? I mean, well, you know, there's a lot of energy and there's a lot of what you can read into your paintings, okay? So it's just interesting you telling me how you're doing it because, just some of those things you wouldn't think of, but that's actually very awesome.
It tickles your fancy to conjure up something of your own. I've taken the strainer from the kitchen and poured from it. The stopper for the sink and poured through it just to create something. And it's so pretty when you get done and you try it again or you different colors. And so it inspires my creativity because when you get to try something that you've never heard of before, you've never seen before, and then you watch yourself do it and it's so pretty. That's the reward for my own self. So, yeah.
Well, you just recently did a new series, a collection called the Alexis Collection. It was a tribute to it's a collection of paintings in honor of your daughter, Alexis. And can you tell us how that collection came about?
That came about after I returned from California. Alexis had a cerebral hemorrhage and was taken to the hospital. And they found the bleed and they closed it and they stopped it. And when I got there the following day, I think, when a parent has to see, you know, you can see these things on television, but when you experience it yourself, it is so frightening. It's just so frightening. And I saw this very vibrant child I had now laying there on just not understanding what has happened to her. And broke my heart. But California shut down visitation due to COVID-19. And so I returned home and I've been here just monitoring her progress. And when I returned, I felt the need to do something to fight the depression. It was so heavy. My soul was so burdened. I couldn't think. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. And I started painting. And I started just throwing paint around. I had no, and my alcohol inks were very instrumental at that point because that is really just moving ink, just literally putting it on the canvas, not wanting to create anything per se. And it went from there. And when I looked up at the wall all the ones that I had done over a 2-week period, it suddenly just came to me, that's a nice collection. And it came to me, why am I doing this? These were all now done because I wanted to show them to her. She didn't have her glasses, but when you do a FaceTime, the nurse could hold the phone in front of her. And I wanted wanted to show her the ones that I had done that I'm going to call these Alexis. And so it evolved from telling her these have your name into the Alexis collection. And it's grown from there. And all of them are just what I feel would liven her spirit. Well, she's doing so well now. Today, when I spoke to her, I showed her a headphone over the ones that were wet. I had just done them and they were wet. And she was smiling all over the place. She was just so happy. And she enjoyed looking at it. And so I explained, I had told her about the collection before, but to actually see a part of it now that she can manage better. Was fun to me. Was so fun to me. And so those are dedicated to her. I'm hoping that those that do visit the site and see it, it's my way of helping them financially because coming home, she's going to need care. She's going to need continued therapy. That is extreme, especially in California. So my best effort is to make whatever I can in order to see her family through with what she's going to be in need of going forward.
And for those that are listening, we'll be sharing a lot of Arlene's artwork on social media, and there'll be information on where you can go to purchase that artwork. Currently, Arlene has a art website. It's called Arlene's Art Shop, and this shop is spelled shop.com. And we'll be sharing that information on Vertical Life Magazine and on our social media, so you'll have a chance to see not only the Alexis collection, but some other collections of Arlene. So, Arlene, so one of the things I want to ask you, because I have to say that, you know, Arlene is never, you never know everything, but I will say when you talk to Arlene, there is always something inspiring that she's doing and saying. And I'll say to you, Arlene, says, when I came to visit in Georgia and I contacted you to see how you were, and I had been diagnosed with breast cancer but didn't have a doctor yet.
Oh.
And so Arlene told me about her doctor, and I tried to call, but I couldn't get in because she was on vacation. But I was sent to another doctor who happened to be one of the most incredible doctors. In fact, when I got up, and I had to tell you that, when I got up that morning to go to her office, I could hear God say to me, you're going to be able to make your decision today.
Yes.
So I just had to say that, Arlene, every time you have done a lot, your energy and what you do has encouraged a lot of people. You know, probably you can't even begin to tell you all the people that you've encouraged, but I wanted to tell you that. And I wanted to ask you, as a mature woman, a woman that's retired, a woman who has come up with this creativity has come alive, and this is, I always say, one of my friends, I asked her once, as she was in her 50s and she got married again, and she said it was just a part of many lives. And so I feel that in talking to you, that you have so many lives you led, and you're still living life, and you're very passionately and full of energy. So I would ask you to say, as a mature woman, what would you share with other women, mature women, in the way of life, love, and moving forward in their lives?
I think that, as you said, so many lives, and when you live through them and you look back at them and you understand what they taught you, that is the key. And even if they're painful, you have to come to the place where you let that pain go because you understand it's not beneficial to you. So the disasters, all the disasters of my life, and of course they were in male-female relationships that those disasters occurred, I feel that I went into the pit, the depths of depression, but I had two prayer warriors on my side, and they always brought me back from those. And I stood up again, and all the other things that transpire, you feel as though now in this place of maturity, I look back and I say, I'm the better for them. Because when I can talk to someone who has a problem or who has a question about what they're going through, I can give them, help them with the clarity that came to me after I got through what I was dealing with. I think that I did not feel, someone would say to me, well, you didn't have that fire in your belly for all the things you're doing now. No, I did not. Because what I was intent on doing was to create a family, be happy and be in love and, go forward from there. So creativity, the voiceover kept me going, but the art, as I said before, I didn't know it was there. And so sometimes when a gift shows up late in your life, embrace it and just go with it. No matter, you don't know how long you have, but put it to use, get it out of you and share it with other people. I truly feel that that's how I'm living now. The thing, big thing I think I've learned is the beginning of understanding what unconditional love really is. When I think about how God loves me, he's kept me going through so much. And when I understand, I can't even begin to love him back. But there I was trying to love other people. I couldn't love myself. Okay. I'm the hardest person on myself. I'm so critical, even now sometimes. And I'm saying, I'm too old to be this critical about this. Yeah, I don't care. it's as though hardships, and maybe whoever presented that hardship to you, you can now look at them and say, you know what? I love you anyway. Because you know what? That hardship made a better place in my mind. That discomfiture you presented to me, that horror that you allowed me to live through, helps me understand how much I am loved. And when people feel that your heart has love for your child, which is different for love for your husband or different love for your parents, it's really just one love. It's love.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about lives that matter. I think if we try to understand, there are only two rules. Love your neighbor as you love yourself, and love God with your heart, mind, and soul. Those are the two rules.
Mm-hmm.
Righteousness is all we should strive for. And if when you understand your neighbor is your husband, your neighbor is your child,
mm-hmm.
your neighbor is across
mm-hmm.
the street. So if you try to spread that kind of love, you find that, and I'm speaking for myself, I'm learning this. I'm truly growing into this place of consciousness about love. It makes all the hurtful things, or many times the painful things, pale. Because I know that next year, 5 years from now, I won't even think about that thing. But I can become bent
mm-hmm.
out of shape by it right now. And I can look at the person that's doing this and say, you know what, I get what has happened here, but I'm going to move forward. I'm going to
mm-hmm.
allow this to take its place in the back, in the background, and when I have to pray about it or when I have to deal with it, in the foreground, it won't hurt so much. I think that's truly what with the Bible study that I do now, going back to understanding what God and this creation was about. What
mm-hmm.
women are supposed to be and how we're supposed to be. God really, he loved us. I mean, guys, he loves them too. But when you think about how he made us and what
right.
our purpose is and how what we're supposed to be doing, I believe that love covers the most of our being. And we understand that when you can express that love in any way, shape, or form, all these paintings, I look around my house, they're full of the love I feel for these children that will inherit them. This is my legacy of love, is what it is. Some small color will jump out of a great big canvas, but just one color comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And every time a child, my nephew was here as I was on talking to you, and he waved to me from the door. And sometime once before he came in and just touched something, and I saw him just like a magnet to just touch that. So I feel
wow.
that this is me expressing my love for them, and
aww.
I go forward
mm-hmm.
with that every day, no matter what comes at me, every day.
Wow.
I encourage older ladies, women like myself that are so much more mature, that we can find a peace about everything in our life if we understand next year this won't mean anything. That hurt won't mean
mm-hmm.
anything to you because you've erased it with a kind thought. You've erased it
so
saying,
true.
I don't know what he or she was dealing with, but I got the tail end of that. Not happy, not
mm-hmm.
happy.
Right. Right.
I'm
uh-huh.
not going to give it back. I'm not going to give it back to you because
right.
it's not going to mean anything next year. So, yes, that's how I would ask anybody that would listen to a word I say of encouragement is that let's try to get to what understanding what unconditional love means and
mm-hmm.
believe that can get you through any situation in life. I had to love my doctor. I had to love every one of those people in service in the cancer care treatment because if I didn't,
mm-hmm.
things could have gone wrong and, you know,
mm-hmm.
they're just doing their jobs. So even
mm-hmm.
in that situation, you you have to try to express it just by a smile, just by saying thank you. When I went in the other day to my phlebotomist, I said, I thank you for being here. I'm so thankful that you're here helping us, working with us.
How
so
wonderful. Yeah, that's wonderful. It's amazing what you can do with just an extra word or a smile or a touch to
yes.
those who are working in certain fields or those you meet.
Yes.
It's just, you don't know the effect that you have on someone.
Yes.
And what an
yes.
opportunity it is to be able to be the one who happened to make them smile that day. That's just an incredible
yes.
feeling, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So
Indeed.
I want to say to those that are listening, again, Arlene, how can people get in touch with you?
The first thing that comes to mind, I finally have a site up that has everything on it, the art shop and my voiceover, and that's at arlenemaguire.com. And,
okay.
Of course, there's Facebook under Arlene Maguire. I'm on Instagram and Twitter and all of those, pretty much under Arlene Maguire. But the website where the book, I think my book, Hanging Out in the Quiet, has a
mm-hmm.
connection to the podcast. The podcast is
okay.
on Podbean under Quiet Moments. So just those places. That they can see more of what I do, who I am. Yeah.
Can you
ArleneMaguire.com.
Can you read us a poem before we go out on our show today?
Yes. Because we ended with a mature note. I open to the grand grands. We call them grandparents. Grand as in grandiose. Grand as in important, impressive. Grand as a higher ranking, and so on, and so on. But do we treat them grandly? No. Sadly, we have put them away. Many of our grands have worked so hard to provide for their young, but find themselves locked away. No visitors, no calls. They quietly live by the memories of times gone by. Bye-bye, the words they hear most, because everyone must leave to return to their own places. The grands who are blessed with the ability to still move about on their own know a special joy. Often, though, it is the beginning of a new way of living. It is not a continuation or the progression of a family line. As the young grow up, ties are severed, and grands must find new avenues to follow. The most fortunate grands are those who are in place still as the new lives come into being. The grands who are called upon to be caretakers of the little ones, both embark upon the path the ancients walked, watching the babies become men and women. These grands see teaching what they were taught. These grands are blessed with the task of helping little minds expand. Yes, times have drastically changed, but the grands learn as they teach. So the lessons are fraught with past and present wisdom.
Wow. So, yeah, also those of you listening, I told you she had a great voice. Yeah, okay. Thank you, Arlene. I appreciate you reading that. I really do. So any last words do you have for us, last thoughts you have for us today, Arlene?
I think more than anything, I repeat to myself all the time, I'm thankful that all of this came to light, came to being, came out of. And I would say to anybody that if you find yourself knowing there's something that you just always like to do, if it's even going fishing, do it. If it's drawing and with a crayon, do it. if it's singing in the shower, I'm going to do a singing in the shower program. If it's singing in the shower, that's something I love. I did the lead to The Sound of Music, Julie Andrews' part, in Spit Junior High School, in church, and moving forward, but I don't sing. Now I sing in the shower, and my husband stays far away. So if it's even singing in the shower, record yourself uh-huh. singing. Mm-hmm. Leave that to remind a young person that comes behind you that, you know, I do like singing. Maybe I should try to sing. Grandma or grandpa does. They did sing. Mm-hmm. Do something that strikes a chord in your heart, something that makes you smile. Just try it. When I get in my car and drive too fast sometimes, I say to myself, yeah, I wish I could go race this car. That's one thing I know I still want to do. My husband is terrified at that idea. But yes, we spend a lot of years working, Celeste, so hard. We work, uh-huh. we've worked. And what now? We just sit and crochet, knitting. I used to knit my own clothes when I was young. Oh. And so even things like those, I had outfits I knitted and scarves and hats. So I say to anyone that would just listen to me, try to do something that you really like doing just for yourself. You don't know who you will bless by it.
That's great. Cool. This has been a great program. I appreciate you having time to be on today. For those of you that
happy
are listening, as I said, I'm going to be sharing Arlene's art in this program. You'll be able to hear this program this evening. But we'll also be sharing tomorrow on social media and on her artwork. You'll be able to go to where you can purchase a canvas or a poster from Arlene, or you can contact her for the original. And Arlene, I just want to say again, thank you so much for coming on here and talking about that second life, even after, you know, talking about surviving. And your energy and your passion is boundless. And it's definitely wonderful to see your artwork. And one thing that I wanted to make sure I said before we go, you also contribute to a charity. What is the charity that you contribute to?
St. Joseph Children's. And mm-hmm. I do that because when you have small children, you know that one day your kids may need that help. And the research that mm-hmm. they do is profound. It's awesome. And knowing parents who may be so distraught and not being able to pay can take their child there to be saved from some drastic mm-hmm. disease, especially cancer. So, yes, that's my heartthrob for charities, yes.
Great. Wonderful. This has been A Woman on the Rise with Arlene McGuire, and I'm your host, Ceestine Duckworth. We've had a great conversation, and you'll be able to hear the recorded. You'll also be able to hear this. We'll be sharing it on social media as well, because I know there's a lot of women out there that are looking for examples, great examples of energy, pursuing your passion. And definitely Arlene is a great example of letting you know that, hey, life begins like the next minute, if that's what it is for you. And all you have to do is get started. Okay. So definitely, I hope we're going to share this, because this is a great, we rarely have women, mature women, come and talk about their second life. And this is just great that we had Arlene on here too. So Arlene.
Oh, thank you for that. My website, Arlene McGuire, oneword.com, will have my email and my phone number there, arlenemcguire.com.
Okay. Great. So we'll be sharing that. So look for that. We'll be sharing that to you tonight and tomorrow. So you'll be able to contact her and see her website and see her artwork. And you'll be able to listen to this program. I'd like to thank you again, Arlene. And thank you, Team Vertical, for setting up this program. And our listeners and supporters, thank you for being there. And always remember that we're on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Arizona time, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Celeste Duckworth, and thank you again. Thanks, Arlene.
Thank you. Bye for now.